What's it like to appear on a TV talent show? My guest this week has done just that, and he'll give us a behind-the-scenes look at the British version of The Voice. I'm Graham Mack. This is London Calling. So, what's happening in Britain? Well, a couple of ex-prime ministers have been having their say on Brexit, and they don't like it. In a minute, you'll hear from the ex-Conservative Prime Minister, John Major. But first, here's what the ex-Labour Prime Minister, Tony Blair, had to say.
The people voted without knowledge of the terms of Brexit. It is their right to change their mind. Our mission is to persuade them to do so.
He's saying we should basically revolt. Now, John Major has said this.
8 months ago, a majority of voters opted to leave the European Union. I believed then, as I do now, that was an historic mistake. But it was one once asked that the British nation had every right to make. The government can't ignore that decision and must now shape a new future for our country. Some changes may be beneficial, others may not. A hard Brexit, which is where we appear to be heading, is high risk. Some will gain, others will lose. Many outcomes are going to be very different from present expectations. We'll find, to take but one example, that for all the social pressure for immigration control, economically, we will need the skills of immigrants.
Turns out the Brexit vote was all about immigration, because we are continually told that immigrants are stealing British jobs. Even though the unemployment figures that came out just after Brexit, at a time when we had the highest immigration in our nation's history, showed the unemployment figures at an 11-year low. But people have changed. People used to take facts and then use those facts to form a belief. Now people form a belief and then look for facts to back it up. And if they see facts that are to the contrary, they just ignore those facts. So we're in a different world. I'm thinking, though, why are we so down on immigrants? Why do we discriminate against immigrants? When someone uses the phrase, they're taking jobs that could be given to British people, well, that's discrimination. That's discriminating against the immigrants and giving some kind of favoritism to people who were born here. Why is that? Why does someone who leaves their own country and makes the effort to come here and learn our language and then work in jobs that we don't want to do, at hours that we don't want to work, and in multiple jobs, why are they the people that we don't want to give the jobs to? And why instead do we favour the people who are only here as an accident of birth, who had no control on how they got here? Shouldn't it be the other way round? Shouldn't we favour the immigrants and discriminate against the people who did nothing to get here? Why isn't that the way it is? You look at the nations where immigration has been incredibly successful. I lived for a long time in Australia. Fabulous country. Fabulous. Not been so great for the Aborigines. They didn't even get the vote till 1973. The indigenous people there were discriminated against, and it built a massive nation. Now, whether that's morally right or wrong is another issue, but it was the immigrants that were given the favoritism that built an amazing nation. Same thing happened in the United States. The North American Red Indians had a terrible time, and it was the immigrants that got the favoritism and the breaks and built an amazing nation, the most powerful on earth. What's happened to the indigenous population of America? Well, they were placed on reservations. Maybe we should do that here. Maybe the indigenous people of Britain should be placed on reservations, You know, the native tribes, the Geordies, the Manx, the Brummies. These different tribes could have their own reservation, and we could just let the immigrants get on and build a better nation. Now, it's not all bad news for the Native Americans. The Native Americans now run fabulously successful casinos because their reservations have tribal sovereignty. The states have limited ability to forbid gambling there. They have an Indian Gaming Regulatory Act of 1988, and it's been successful. As of 2011, there were 460 gambling operations run by 240 tribes, with a total annual revenue of $27 billion. Wouldn't we as the indigenous people of Britain want that kind of money coming in? If they put us on reservations and we built these massive casino complexes, not only could we make loads of money, but imagine the jobs we'd create in hospitality industries, bar work and hotels and cleaners. Imagine the jobs that would create for even more immigrants. Jim McCabe's on Skype from Philadelphia. And Jim, you've been following this big murder case in Britain. Husband and wife. She's a successful children's author. The husband was accused of murdering her and the family dog and hiding both of them in the septic tank in the back garden. Well, he's been found guilty.
Ooh. What makes it even juicier is his previous wife also died. She died after an epileptic fit.
A suspicious epileptic fit.
Well, I don't know exactly what's going on there because, to die of an epileptic fit, I'm guessing you could choke or you could bash your head. Both of those could be caused by not having an epileptic fit as well, couldn't they? If someone was murdering you. I can't think of any other way of dying from an epileptic fit. Bang your head or choke. That's it, isn't it?
or be stabbed.
Yes, but
during the epileptic fit.
I don't think that happened.
Or shot.
I think, I think if she'd been stabbed or shot, maybe they would have looked a bit deeper into that case.
Yeah. But perhaps.
Yeah. But this one...
Maybe some red flags would have been up.
Yeah.
Oh.
But this one, the children's author that he killed, his last wife, she was found, on the post-mortem, found traces of sleeping, a drug, sleeping tablets, in her system.
Oh.
And he was prescribed sleeping tablets, the same drug. So he's gone to the doctor and said, I can't sleep. I don't know what's going on. I can't sleep. Got a load of sleeping tablets, given them to her. And they're not sure whether she was dead before she went in the tank. What a way to go. On sleeping tablets. Whacked out on sleeping tablets. I mean, it's just a movie, isn't it?
It sounds like there's a show I watch called Criminal Minds.
Right.
Which is about basically the FBI, our Scotland Yard, going after serial killers.
Right.
And this sounds like an episode of that show.
Yeah. Her fortune from being a successful children's book author went to him. And they reckon that's the motive. That's why he did her in, to get the money.
Uh-huh.
It's just brilliant, isn't it? But imagine being...
He's not getting it anymore.
No. But imagine being the family, because you would have known him. And he pleaded his innocence all along. He even helped the police search for her body at one stage with everybody. Loads of volunteers from the local community all went looking for the body. And he was one of the searchers. You know, he was playing it all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. But he said things like, oh, no. It's definitely not here. Let's look over there.
Yeah, you're cold. You're cold.
Oh, no, yeah.
You're getting warmer, but you're cold.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure, no, it's not going to be here. No, let's look over that way.
Yeah. But he did the dog in as well. Was he worried the dog would talk? Did the dog see it? And that's the, you know, it's got everything, this story, tragic as it is, but it has all the elements. Great motive. You know, she had an interesting life as an author. And then it turns out his previous wife died too. Well, they'll have to investigate that one now. There's a cold case file to open up. Pretty easy to close down as well. Just tack that one on. You know, don't even waste the money in an investigation.
Yeah. It's just sort of an afterthought. Oh yes, and 25 years for this one, and we're gonna get tack on another 5 for the previous one as well.
And that's it. Finished. We're done. You know, they don't need to prove it. It's suspicious enough.
Yeah. Do you want to admit it? No. Okay. Well, we're going to give you another 5 anyway.
And it's not like, you know, they need to investigate it in case they lock up an innocent man. He's already killed one wife. He's going to be locked up anyway.
Yeah.
Just lock him up for a bit longer. You know, that actually should be a given in life, that if you lose your wife, even if it's totally innocent, if you murder the next one, you should go down for both. You know, just as a little more of a deterrent, that if you lose your partner through natural circumstances, natural causes, nothing to do with you, that should be, well, I better not murder the next one because I'll be up for both. That should be in the back of your mind. That could have saved her. If we'd had that as that's how it works, that might
as a precedent,
everybody in the world knew that going in, that if you lose a partner and it's no fault of your own, if you murder the next one, we're going to convict you of that one.
And his parting words are going to be, you're still cold, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm not admitting anything, but... yes, you're quite cold.
Yeah. There's no point looking up there. In fact, there's no point looking up anywhere. Yeah. Get out of that tree. No. It's not, you know. Yeah. You got to go deeper. Yeah. I don't want to give you too many clues, but use your nose. Yeah. You'll soon sniff her out.
The dog had it right, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why the dog is dead.
He must have been worried about the dog talking, mustn't he? The dog turning into a canary.
And I think people would be more up in arms that he killed the dog.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, here too. Yeah, here too. Maybe if the dog knew what had gone on, that if the police showed up to question him, the dog could have led the police. Why is the dog digging over here?
The dog saw too much.
Yeah, the dog knew too much.
And that's the name of the TV movie that's going to be made.
Yes, it is. Wow, that is definitely going to be a TV movie. That is the best, I mean, tragic as it is the best crime story.
Yeah, it's got everything.
In this country, since the one that happened in a place called Seton Carew. Have you heard this one? This one's brilliant.
No.
And this one did become a dramatized TV thing. The bloke's name was Darwin, and he lived in Seton Carew, which is in the northeast of England. I know this because I was living up there at the time. This bloke, Darwin, he had financial trouble. He decided he'd fake his own death, and with his wife as an accomplice, that's what they did. He went out in a canoe into the sea, and then they found the canoe and didn't find him, so they assumed he was missing. So she claims on the insurance. Meanwhile, they've rented or bought the house next door and knocked a hole in the wall, and he would go next door and hide. And then when no one was around, he'd go back into their house through this hole, which was through a wardrobe, a closet. He would appear through the wardrobe, through the coats, right? And he did this for a while, but he mustn't have been able to keep it up, because in the end, the two of them flew. I don't know. They must have had fake passports or something. They flew to somewhere in South America. I want to say Panama, but it was somewhere like that. They were going around real estate agents to buy an apartment. And they bought an apartment and the real estate agent took a picture of them and it went on the internet and that's what caught them.
Wow.
Yeah. But the wife got, I mean, he went to jail for a long time and so did the wife. And the two of them fell out because they lied. She lied to their sons. She told their children that their dad was dead. And she knew he was in the next door, in the room, in this room next door through the wardrobe.
And above the wardrobe, it says, to Narnia.
Well, funny you should say that. One of the newspapers, I forget which one of the daily newspapers, when they were convicted and the story all came out, the headline in the newspaper was, "The Lion, the Bitch, and the Wardrobe." I've come to the studios of Bob FM now, which is the radio station where I present a daily show in Britain. I'm here because an ex-employee of Bob is now a reality TV star. Lawrence Hill is a singer-songwriter from Coddicott, just north of London, and he's been a contestant on the British version of The Voice. So welcome back to Bob, Lawrence. How long did you work here?
I worked here for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lovely year and a half that was, eh?
Did you enjoy it?
I did. Of course I did. But yeah. Met some great people.
Yeah, and you met me as well.
And I got to meet you as well. the Jeremy Clarkson of Hertfordshire.
I don't know about that. So, things have changed quite a bit. You were on The Voice. Just talk me through, because, well, actually, let's back up before that, because you're working in sales in radio. A lot of our advertisers will probably know you very well, because you were ringing them up and going around and seeing them and trying to get them to buy advertising.
If they've got good memories, they might remember me. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. And at the time, you were a working musician as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you decided to go full-time.
Yeah.
And leave us.
Yes.
And you were on...
A tough call.
Was it? Was it
a tough
call?
Yeah, it was a tough call because it was a bit of a step into the unknown because, obviously, whilst I was working here, I was doing weekends. So you suddenly step from a full-time job to getting phone calls about gigging on the weekend. And then you're thinking, I need to make this a full-time thing.
Yeah,
and so I had to adapt to that pretty quick and try and expand and make a shout of it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, it would have been because you know you got to eat.
Yeah.
You got to eat.
Yeah. So how did you make that decision?
Well, I've never wanted to permanently work for someone else anyway.
It was
not what I wanted. So I knew that I was going to do something by myself, and it just so happened that what I love doing it for a hobby was what people were phoning me up to try and pay me to do as well. So obviously that was lovely, a great feeling. And it worked out well.
Yeah. And what about family? How did they take the news?
Well, they were part of the decision making process because I'm quite close to them. I still live at home. I still see my family every single day, all the time. So it was actually chatting to them in depth about it. About what the process would be and what steps need to take and having some backing of the family was lovely. So once I got that, I knew that, I couldn't really go wrong because I had their support, you know.
And how old are you?
I'm now 26.
26.
Mm.
And it is
a few years older,
that's
a few years wiser.
Well, I don't know. I was 27 when I gave up being an air conditioning engineer and decided to have a crack at radio.
There you go.
So there's something happens about that age when you say, no, I'm going to go for it now, or I'm going to regret it the rest of my life.
Exactly, because the time you're 30, you definitely want to be doing what you want to do for the rest of your life, I think.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then well, obviously, you know, there's always time to change and everything. You know, life is what you make of it. But in my head, by the time I was 30, I wanted to be doing this.
Yeah.
And I'm 26 and doing this, so that's all right.
We've seen you on The Voice. Blimey. How did that happen?
Okay, so there's two stories I could tell here. One of them would be the one that I'm supposed to tell, and another one could be the actual truth. But
well, let's have the truth.
I don't know which one I should say.
Since it's
you guys, I might try and step bridge the middle.
Okay.
I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I never actually was a huge fan of any of those shows. When I say those, I'm talking about the category of talent shows.
Well, actually, serious musicians do look down on these things.
They do. But then I looked into it and I started to wonder why they did, because serious musicians, when you say serious musicians, they're quite often musicians that have been in the music business for decades. And there wasn't really anything like that when they were coming through and coming and developing their act and trying to get found. And so they've done it what they would call the old school way, yeah. where they've gone and they've gigged and they've been spotted and they've been given a record deal or they've been given management and had investment or whatever. But it's not that when I looked into it, when I looked actually into it, because it's very easy to stereotype and be like, "Oh, those shows, no, can't do them. It'll ruin your reputation or whatever." But times change, and now it is without a doubt the best platform available to get yourself heard. I mean, there's nothing else like it.
It's national TV. It's Saturday night. It's big ratings.
It's big ratings. I think 5.6 million people watched it last weekend.
Yeah.
On Saturday night. So, and then this weekend coming up, depends when this is going out actually.
This will be going out this week.
This week. So, yeah, so this weekend is the battles where, so all the blind auditions, all the button pushing's all done, all the teams are filled up.
Yeah.
And it gets a little bit, when they call it a battle, I don't really like it because when you sing a song with someone, you're trying to do it justice. You're not trying to fight someone in a song, you know. So.
Yeah.
But that, all that aside, it is just a very unique way for a singer-songwriter like myself, because I'm not a karaoke singer. I'm not a dancer or a showman as such. I am more, I write music and I play it in front of people and I try and get people to remember where they were when they heard a song that they liked, or so they go and download it and they like it and they put it in the car. So for a singer-songwriter, it's something different to try and just get people to know the name and perhaps go out and buy a CD or come to a gig.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm not just, you know, the voice hasn't been it. I went on tour with Kim Wilde last year around Europe, which was amazing, which was the real sort of music side of things, in my opinion. Whereas the voice is very much a television show more than a music talent show.
What did you learn on the tour with Kim? Because she's from Codicut as well.
She's from Codicut as well.
It's like two locals out there.
that was surreal because I'd gone from knowing Kim as like a housewife in Codicut to, which is Kim Fowler in Codicut, is what she was telling me. And then she puts that in a box when the plane landed, all the black leather came out and all the makeup was put on and then suddenly she was Kim Wilde again. She was bouncing off the stage and she had all this energy. And she was a whole different person that had evolved, especially for being on stage in front of people to entertain people,
yeah.
to play her songs. So I learned a lot very quickly with that, because she was able to switch it. Because I can imagine it'd be quite tiring to be Kim Wilde all of the time.
Yeah.
100% of the time. It'd be just absolutely, absolutely draining. So I've learned that. I've learned that sort of when you're out doing the music thing, I'm giving it my all. And then I can, when I'm at home or whatever, I can actually just, turn it down a bit and conserve energy so that you can give your best. Cause if you're like me, if you're right at the bottom of the career sort of platform for music, you need to be going out, you know, you need to be going out three or four times a week gigging.
Yeah.
Everyone says, "Oh, you know, I'll get a lucky break one day," and they wait for the phone to ring, but it won't. You have to go out and find it.
Yeah.
So doing that would be quite overwhelming and quite tiring if you had it full on the whole time. So to just relax and just be happy to be present sometimes is really helpful for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Zone out.
Yeah, yeah. Because to have a definite difference between the stage persona and Lawrence Hill the person.
Yes.
I always wondered, you know, whether Elvis lost his way. I mean, we're talking an old reference here, but you watch something like Elvis, That's the Way It Is from 1969, and you see him doing the rehearsals, and he's just wearing like a normal shirt and trousers and whatever. And then when he goes on stage, he's in the Elvis suit.
Mm-hmm.
But then you watch a movie from 3 years later, Elvis on Tour, 72. He's in the Elvis suit on and off the stage. He's got the big belt buckle and all that. And I think, just wonder if he lost who he was.
I wonder. I mean, I wonder if that's happened to a few people. You know, people like Bowie and people like George Michael,
who
sadly we've lost recently. Whether they've done the same, and perhaps it becomes a bit too much for one body to cope with. Perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because Kim's very, very grounded. We've had her show, and she's great. She's just lovely.
Yeah, she is. Really pleasant, really pleasant. But then the attitude comes out when she's on stage and all that, and the cheekiness. So.
All right, so let's talk about how you got on The Voice then, the real story.
The real story. Yeah, I was just
you get to the point that. Where you realise you're going to just put all the prejudice against these kind of shows, because as you said, you mentioned karaoke singers, and that's what they're.
That's what
their
I assumed it was all like.
Yeah, you've got to that point. Then what?
Okay, let's just get over and done with it. I might get in trouble with saying this, but they phoned me up. They phoned me up. They have done for a few years, and that's what made me look into it in the first place. It wasn't something I'd woken up thinking I'd like to do that this year, or I'm interested in that. It was never something that was an option in my head. Purely because of what I explained to you before. But they spoke to me for a while on the phone and talked to me about the show and how it's exciting. It's moving to ITV loads of this new stuff. Well, they mentioned about, you know, how I might even be able to sing my own song on the blind audition, so mm-hmm. I could take original material, sing a songwriter stuff onto that platform. Which when they said that, I was like, right, when do I start? When do I come in? Who do I meet? Because yeah. that was kind of in my head the perfect scenario. But it transpired that didn't happen because the coaches have to have something to compare the song to, blah blah blah. But anyway, that's how it happened. So they got me in a room and then they got me quite excited about it by talking to me about it. We met a few times and I had a few auditions behind the scenes before any of the cameras and all that stuff. And then it went on and then they invited me to be part of the blind audition process.
So how'd they heard about you?
So one of their people had seen a video I'd put up on like this. It's one of the Facebook chat groups of Ronnie Scott's from London, because I'd been looking at playing down there. I'm just about to book one down there, but I just started talking to them about coming down and doing a night. And then the phone rang. So someone was obviously looking at, people that were interested in playing. And, I had my video that my first music video that I released a couple of years ago. And that's what they saw. And that's how they got in touch with me.
Right. So then you go on The Voice. How did you choose? They tell you you can't play your own song. How did you choose the song?
Yeah, so that process, what happens is they sent me a folder of songs that was like, I don't know, 700 or 800 songs in it that they'd picked. And I had to flick through that and pick 3. And I did. And then I sent 3 back to them. And I still put in there just because I wanted to just show them that I am this person. I put in 3 of my own songs back to them because I just wanted to.
Why not? Like, yeah.
So anyway, they came back and said, no, I've got to pick. So I picked 3 songs. They picked one. And they picked that one. They picked the Save Tonight by Eagle Eyed Cherry, which I played before, loads of times before live anyway. So I thought, oh, why not? You know, I'm comfortable with the song. And so that's how that got chosen.
Right. So then you go on. So you know you've got the good song. You know you've got the goods. You've played it live before. Mm-hmm. And all the chairs are all facing the back. Yeah. Facing you, or the back of the chairs are facing you.
Mm.
And then Will.i.am's chair turns around. So we're watching on TV. We can see what we think has happened. Yes. What are you thinking at that point? Because it did take a little while too.
It did take a little while. Well, it was right towards, because I started off very mellow. It's very mellow using the lower bits of my voice. And it only got bigger towards the end. And obviously he was rubbing the smudge off of his button. I've looked at the clip and, well, you'll have to watch the next episode. Will and I have a sit down and talk about the whole thing anyway. So that's on the TV on Sunday.
Okay.
But I didn't even know, because obviously when you're in there, to start with, I just want to say that it was the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done or probably ever will do in my whole entire life.
Really? After all the gigs, after being on tour?
I'm not going to lie. Yeah,
After
being on tour with Kim Wilde. Because with Kim Wilde, when they introduced me, everyone was cheering and clapping and was excited to hear my songs and what I was doing, which was just me with a guitar, with a loop pedal. Whereas this one, I'd had to put together the composition of the song that I liked, rehearse it with the band, who are incredible. We're talking like Adele's drummer and world-class musicians. So that was probably the highlight of my whole blind audition, was playing with those guys. But then I had to walk up on that huge stage with a studio audience that was completely silent and then just stand there. You don't see this when it's been edited for the TV show. But I was stood there in the middle of that stage with no one making a sound for about a minute whilst they prepared and got the right camera shot or whatever, because like I say, it's a television program, so they focus on that.
The lighting.
And you're just stood there, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, like, what's going to happen if I don't hit the right note or something, and you start worrying about it, but which was totally different to every other gig I've done, because you just get on and go.
Yeah.
And you're at your own pace, whereas I was being dictated.
Yeah.
Which is very odd.
Yeah.
So anyway, that happened, and then Will turned around midway through the song. I had my eyes shut at the time.
Why?
Because I was going for the big note.
All right, you've got to concentrate.
I'm trying to do my thing, you know. I'm inside myself singing the song, you know. I wasn't looking at the time.
Yeah.
But then I see Will facing me, and then obviously I have no idea. So then he starts talking afterwards about how mysterious things happen and all that stuff. And they edited it very well. But, you know, I had to hold my tongue because I was mortified. I was horrified about what happened, you know.
Why was it a good thing, though, if he turns around?
Good thing that he turned around. Which I think I said on the day that I'll take it. But Well, it turns out, you know, it's given me quite a bit of attention. A lot of the media have been interested in it and stuff. But I was cross.
Right.
I was so cross. I don't know if you could probably, you who know me before, if you watched it, you might see that the slight aggravation on my face at the moment when he says that, because, I tried to hide it, but, you know, hopefully I hid it well enough. But I was quite, it was a mixture, because the thing I feared most was having to walk back without any turns, which so many amazing singers have had to do this series.
Yeah.
I don't know how much, you or the listeners have watched it, but I've watched all of it because obviously, being of interest in it. There's been some incredible talent that they haven't turned for, and I'm a bit shocked and quite disappointed with some of their decisions. I'd rather have seen, you know, a couple of the other guys go through instead of me, because they were that good.
Yeah.
So, the whole thing was a bit, like we said before we started recording, the whole thing's been a total whirlwind.
Right.
Never know. It's a mixed bag. I don't know what to think about it just yet.
But, so at the moment he turned round,
yeah,
you're really pleased. It was
I wanted Will anyway. I went in because I didn't really know who Gavin was. I was like, who's this guy? He's had loads of success in America. He's this English guy. He was married to a celebrity, but you know, what's he doing? But turns out he's a lovely bloke and really, really, and deserves to be on the show.
Right.
And Tom Jones, I didn't think would connect with my music anyway. I just had a feeling.
Yeah.
But it turns out he's had lovely words to say about me as well. But anyway, out of all of them, I wanted Will because he's real current. He's a producer and he's spoken to me recently about getting into the studio with him just to try out.
Has he? Because he's a dream maker, isn't he?
He is. He likes to. What Will I Am is for all the people listening who'd like to get an idea of what he's like. He is exactly what you'd expect. So what you see on the television is honestly what he's like the whole time. He's completely eccentric, so wacky. Strange, you know, off the wall, but he is always thinking about the next three songs he can produce and write,
right,
because maybe one of them will be a hit,
yeah,
constantly. So he's always switched on to the idea of, what if we write that bit down, or why don't I just make a little sound recording of that bit of piano and put that together with that, the whole time.
Yeah.
Even when he's doing his job on the show, yeah, having to present stuff and talk and coach us, he would be on a tangent all of a sudden saying, I've just had an idea, and he gets his phone out and write it down. Because I wanted to be around someone that's that inspiring, because he just lives and breathes making music.
Yeah.
Not all of his records are the best songs in the world, but he, like he says, he looks for the next three in the hope that one of them might be, yeah, you know, a big hit.
Yeah.
Which I found really inspiring.
Right. So you're pleased he's turned around.
I'm pleased he's turned around.
But then you're really annoyed.
Then I'm really
that
annoyed.
That it was a mistake. Did you think they were going to take it off you?
No, but I was quite tempted to walk away.
You were?
I was very close to walking away and saying, right, you can have it. You know, I was so close, but then I just thought, hang on, because I'm trying to do two things here. I'm trying to give off the best impression of who I am and what I'm into and what I sound like, and at the same time, cause a bit of a stir or do something that will make people remember who I am. Because otherwise, people watch it one week and they don't have a clue who.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the other contestants, I bet that have a nice smooth sailing trip through and get lovely comments and get a few turnarounds, people won't remember who they are.
Got to get noticed.
Yeah, you've got to do something to grab attention,
yeah,
especially in this game, especially in the entertainment game.
Yeah.
So I was glad that happened, but at the same time, I was thinking, do I make a massive meal out of this, or do I go along with it and be myself? And so I just decided to be myself, because at the time, being put on the spot like that, it was the easiest thing to do, isn't it? Because being yourself is always the go-to option.
You have to be yourself because everyone else is taken.
And people, who said that, exactly. Everyone else is taken. Whoever said that? A wise man once said.
Yeah.
Graham Mack. So that was kind of it. And I was just myself. And like I said, we do have a sit down and a little chat in the next episode without giving any spoilers away.
All right. So there are some people that are saying the whole thing was set up for telly. That he was told to do that.
And yes.
What's your view of that, then, having spoken to him?
Well, I can't say anything about that, really. Because
well, what do you think though? Do you think there's a chance it was a setup?
No.
Okay.
No. You know, I've signed a bit of paper saying I won't say anything bad about anything. So
okay,
so I've got to be careful what I say. So I can tell you for certain that I was not told that what was going on. So
yeah.
I'm assuming they weren't either, because if they'd planned this, they might have told me about it. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
It was a complete shock when that came across.
Yeah.
When Will said that. So I don't think it's planned. I think it was. I think that's Will I Am. I think that's what he does.
Yeah.
Well,
of all the things that's happened on this season of The Voice,
do I think he meant to push the button? Yes, I think he meant to push the button.
You do?
Yes. I fully and 100% believe he meant to push his button, because I believe in myself. You have to believe in yourself before you can believe in anything else you do, especially, like say, with this entertainment business. So, I'm pretty convinced he meant to push it.
Okay. So, this happened, and of all the contestants on The Voice and of everything that's happened this season, this is the big talking point, which did get you noticed.
Funny old world, isn't it?
Isn't it? You've done all sorts. You've done GMTV and what kind of stuff have you, what kind of attention have you got?
So they loved it. Well, I went on the Good Morning Britain program and it was on live telly. So I had to be very careful what I said. But all the papers went mad when I insinuated that Will was a plonker. They loved that. They were hoping that the papers love it, don't they?
Like, yeah.
All that sort of animosity and stuff like that. So I'm guessing they wanted Will to react to it to me, but right. he hasn't. Will's a very busy man. He doesn't look at the papers for that sort of thing. But I meant it. You know that is a plonker thing to do to someone. imagine if the roles were reversed. I said to and Will was on this show and he was as nervous as I was and he's trying to make a career. Decided this was the right thing to do, and then suddenly I've turned around for him and I've said, oh, sorry, pal, like I actually did it totally by accident, but I thought you were okay anyway. I imagine what he would think and what he would say to me.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think he'd use a different style of language because he doesn't speak like I do. I watch too much Only Fools and Horses for that sort of thing, but he would think the same, so that therefore I think we're kind of equal and we have a mutual respect for each other in that sense.
Right.
The fact that I'll stand up for myself and Will will say it how it is, I think that's nice instead of anything false.
Mm.
You know.
So tell me, has there been more pressure then since you've got all the attention and the papers have been ringing you up and you've been booked on TV shows and all the rest?
Not really. No, it's all in a day's work. I think it's everything that I wanted. It's everything that I wanted to happen. It's attention is very important, and it's why I decided to go with The Voice because, like I said, I explained that I'd do it because it's the best platform to be on to do something and to get noticed. So that kind of happened. So it's very fortuitous that the circumstances fell at my feet as they did. So I was really happy, but I get moments when it feels strange, but it's very normal. It's not like the phone's ringing 24/7. I'll get a phone call a couple of times a day from people wanting an answer, and I'll quite often tell them the same things. And I'm just telling people what's happened, really. You know, I'm not. Yeah. There's nothing that it's really not breaking news, is it? It's just Will's accidentally pushed his button, and I'm saying these things, and that's kind of it. You know, I'm having fun.
Yeah, and it's everything you wanted. You didn't get into this to be unknown.
No, I mean, the idea for me was to go into the show, cause a bit of a kerfuffle, and then be, you know, whenever my time comes to an end on the show, be like, right, see you guys later. My name's Lawrence Hill. Get in touch with me.
Yeah. You know. And have it kick on for something else.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Because I just want to go, and at the end of the day, I don't care too much for all of this media stuff and the stories. I just want to go and play music.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I don't do, I'm not, I'm not.
And to do that, you need an audience.
I'm not Piers Morgan, you know, I'm not. I'm not going after J.K. Rowling over this one, you know what I mean? So
right.
I just want to go and play. I just want to go and play my songs, release music and make a living, you know, and have a good time.
Yeah. So has the whole season been taped or do you have to go back and do stuff? What where are you at in the whole process? Because we're only at the very beginning, really, I'm guessing.
That's right. Well, you're very nearly caught up now. You're very nearly caught up. So what happened with the whole pre-recording bit, which had to be done because it takes a long time, was last year they pre-filmed all of the blind auditions. And they pre-filmed all of the battle rounds.
Right.
And the battle round is next weekend, this weekend coming up.
Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's live.
So you've still got that to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. So if I get through, you see.
Can you tell us if you get through?
Absolutely not. You're not allowed. No spoilers. That's embarked. Oh, God, no.
All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, God,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's very much, you have to, you know, that's the edge of the seat stuff, that is.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, no one knows who I'm paired with or what song I'm singing. So let's keep it under wraps, you know, let's hopefully people watch it. And
okay. Now, if then.
Okay.
If then you've made it into the live round, would you then go into like a cone of silence? Would you be in like a camp with the...
No.
You wouldn't. So if you'd made it into the live round, you could come back in and tell us how it's going.
Yes.
Oh.
And in inverted commas, you know, if I make it through
if you make
the
it
live
through.
Rounds, I would... Yeah. I would be, basically, my game plan is the exact same. Cause a stir, be memorable. If I make it through to the live rounds, I will be insisting on playing my own material, or I'll be out as well.
Right, okay.
For a start.
Yeah.
Because there's no point just, otherwise I will be just another one of those karaoke singers that's doing what I'm told, being a good boy. So if, in inverted commas,
yes,
I make it
through. Because we don't know. Well, we don't know. You know, no. But you can't say.
Absolutely right.
And that's okay. That's the work. I appreciate that and respect that. That's, you've signed a thing. Do they pay you?
I don't know if I can even say that. Well, no. No. No.
You must get your expenses, though, don't you?
All expenses. All expenses.
Okay.
I was going to and from London and Manchester loads last year.
Yeah.
And well, actually, funny enough, yeah, they are very generous, The Voice, because I was on tour with Kim Wilde. I was in Holland.
Yeah.
And they had to fly me to a dress rehearsal in Manchester, right smack in the middle of the tour. And they said to me, can you just miss a few dates of the tour? I was like, no. This is better.
Show must go on.
Go supporting someone like Kim Wilde, who every middle-aged bloke listening right now will think, oh, they'll be jealous of me right now because they would have had photos of her on their wall and stuff. I'm not missing a tour date to go and do a bit of filming, dress rehearsal for some TV show, right? So that might not even work out.
Yeah.
So that might not even work out, exactly. So what they turned around and said is, don't worry, Lawrence, we will fly you from Amsterdam to Manchester to do a day's filming and rehearsal and then fly you back to get you to your next gig on time.
Wow.
And I was like, challenge accepted. You have a go at that, because it was a bit of a...
That's proper show.
I mean,
we
finished the show in somewhere, Utrecht or something, one night, and we got home back to the hotel at 1 o'clock. I had to be in Amsterdam at 3 o'clock, which was an hour and a half's drive away, to fly to Manchester to be in the ITV studios in Manchester at 7 o'clock, to finish filming at 3 o'clock, to get a 4 o'clock flight back to Amsterdam, which was an hour and a half's drive away from Eindhoven, which the show started at 7. I was on at 7.
How did you do that? With adrenaline?
Yeah, I think I broke the speed limit a couple of times as well in Holland. So let's just hope they don't have any... I didn't think they had any cameras, but I would have known by now. So it was close. And then the guy, when I got to the car park with my car, because luckily I had my car out that I drove out to on tour with, so I had all my gear with me. The guy literally sprinted out the lift, told me to get out of my car, he'd park it. I grabbed the guitar, ran in, went up the lift, got plugged in, and they had already done all the sound. I didn't sound check or anything for this date, and there was like 3,000 people there waiting for me to play. And I sprinted up, and I was out of breath when I sat down on my stool in front of 3,000 people and my family that had flown out to see that one date.
That was the one they were going to see, yeah, of all the dates.
And then, so that was like a 25-hour day. And I, after speaking to a few people in the industry, because of this whole Voice stuff and trying to get an idea of what it would be like in the future, I was told that that's quite a short day in the music business. So I've got a lot more of that to come if things go well for me. But I loved it. Adrenaline gets pumping and, you know, you're rushing around. Am I going to make it? It's good fun. I loved it. I loved it.
Well, I hope you continue to have fun, and we'll keep watching. Yeah, you know how it turns out. We'll keep our eye on it. Lawrence, it's great to see you again. Yeah, thanks for coming back in.
Thanks very much.
And best of luck with it all, mate. It's just terrific. It's just really great.
Thank you.
This is London Calling.
Well, that's it for this week. More next week. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Graham Mac. If you want to hear more Mac Nuggets, check out my website, macmedia.co.uk, and subscribe to my Bob FM show on iTunes. Got a question or something to say? Send me an email. Put your phone number in the email. I might call you back or maybe even Skype you on the show. My email address is graham@macmedia.co.uk. And you spell Graham like the cracker, Mac like the truck. Till next time. Ta-da!